The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 688. It's the 19th of January, 2017. On the podcast today, I have Dominic White, CEO of Energizer Investments. That's ENGI ticker. Covers their investment strategy and also talks about the management's background. Plus, I also have Ian Strafford-Taylor, CEO of Fair Effects Group. That's FFX. Covers their trading update and today's acquisition. Plus, Geo Andredi, CEO of Wide Sales Group, that's WDC, on their strategy and potential in the cord blood banking and stem cell treatment sector. I've also got today's suggested one for your watch list, which is Zinc Media, Z-I-N, submitted by Sun Bagger. Don't forget, everything you hear in this podcast is not intended as investment advice, just information on which to base your research. I've also got the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets platform in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs on our platform this morning. By the way, there's three in joint fourth place.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dominic White, CEO of Energizer Investments. Ticker there is ENGI. Dominic, thank you for coming on.
Thanks, Justin. Looking forward to chatting to you.
Yeah, well, I've had a lot of interest. I mean, for a long time, last week or a couple of weeks, people saying, get these guys on the podcast, get these guys on. So we passed it on to Vox, and Vox got in contact, and here you are. So it's the power of the private investor. So I know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I know full well. Yeah, exactly. I know full well. So, you know, this is going to get listened to because it's been requested. So first and foremost, Dominic, can you explain what Energizer is all about, please?
Absolutely. Well, Energizer is a listed investment company. We're focused on investing in operating companies that have an underlying real estate portfolio rather than investing in traditional property. So an example of that could be something like a service department company. So we end up owning or investing in the company that is effectively the tenant and has the underlying real estate portfolio let or owned as well.
So why do you invest in property operating companies?
Well, we invest in operating companies or property operating companies because it creates value at different levels for shareholders, for investors. For example, as I've just said, you end up owning the tenant, so we can grow the tenant, we can grow revenue, we can grow the multiplier attached to the tenant to increase the value of the tenant and the value of that first part of the investment. And also because we can grow the value of the underlying real estate portfolio as well. So we like the connection of both those two and the ability to influence and build the value for shareholders. Both of those things. But we also like operating companies because we can scale them up really well and really quickly. So, for example, without using a lot of capital, and traditionally property or real estate requires quite a lot of capital to build portfolios, whereas within operating companies, you can own part of your portfolio, but you can also rent part of your portfolio. And that means you can add to your tenant, your operating company's revenue, without having to deploy an enormous amount of capital into the underlying assets. And also, lastly, we use a lot of technology. Within the operating companies, we use as much technology as possible to automate processes, to analyze what we're doing, to look at our key performance indicators. So we're really always on top of what's going on in the operating companies, and it allows us to give the best possible service to the customers of the operating companies too. So technology is a really important part of what we're doing at Energizer and the investments we make.
Yeah. Okay, so can you tell us more about sort of prop tech? What is that?
Yeah, we call it prop tech, so tech applied to property. So you've heard of fintech, finance and technology. This is prop tech, property and technology. and it's really maximizing the use of technology applications within our portfolios to manage the underlying units, to look at how the team is performing in terms of the sales that are going on, to keep on top of the accounting, to forecast where our occupancy rates are going, and to really automate as much as we can so that we can scale the business back to scaling the business again successfully without adding a lot to our operating costs. So technology or prop tech is what we're calling it for technology on property. It's all about being efficient and being able to scale without adding lots to operating costs.
I understand. And you know, when people have asked me to get you guys on, there's been a lot of people mention, check out their background, check out their history, look at their track record. So can you tell us a bit about your history and your track record, please, Dominic?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got a great team. As chairman, there's Stephen Wicks and Nish Mould as CFO. They've got a great background. They They've built very large listed businesses before. They're currently on the board of Inland Homes PLC, which some of the listeners will know about and may well invest in. So there's myself. I come from real estate investment management, real estate private equity. So having invested several billion euros in property and property operating companies before in the UK and across Europe. And one of the great things, I think, which is extremely important here, is that as management, we're very, very aligned with all the shareholders. So we invested heavily in the business and will remain invested heavily in the business. So as we grow and as we make money, then shareholders will make money too. I mean, in terms of backstory, you were asking, well, the business has been going through for a few years, Energizer, but I've got involved myself very recently. It's been quite a low-level activity business, as shareholders and as your listeners will see. I got involved in October specifically with a mandate for the reason of growing the business, refocusing the strategy, getting some capital into the business, and starting the build-up, starting the scale-up to create a successful investment company.
Okay, so you're now sort of proactive in that growth trajectory. All right, so are there any specific sectors you like within the property operating company space?
Yeah, absolutely. We really like the serviced apartment sector, which some of the listeners will already know about through entities like Airbnb. Airbnb have done a fantastic job in recent years, clearly one of the biggest tech companies in this space in the world, at opening the eyes of consumers, but also businesses as to, instead of using hotels where they're staying in places, using apartments and getting the benefits of apartments, kitchens and what have you, rather than being stuck in hotels. So they've really started creating a lot of demand in the service apartment sector. What Airbnb can't do is put a brand and a service around those apartments that are being let. So why I like the service apartment sector is you can provide the assets, but you can also provide a brand wrapped around the operating company, so that when people book apartments with us, whether it's corporates for corporate housing, whether it's leisure users, they can rest assured they're getting the kind of service they're going to need. And it's a sector which is very, very big in other countries, in the States and in Singapore, very big, and incredibly in London, it's still an undersupplied sector. So there's a lot of opportunity in London and the UK, in major cities of the UK. And lastly, it's because in that area, it is still underinvested by the larger institutional investors out there. So a lot of money has flown into a lot of property sectors in recent years, in particular something called student housing. A lot of institutional money has gone there, pushing up pricing, but a lot has not yet gone into this service apartment sector. So we're very keen to be in it and getting it quickly because of the opportunities it presents.
Okay, so where are you at the moment, Dominic, in the development of Energizer Investments?
Clearly, the market will know and will have seen that we successfully raised £1.255 million in December, just before Christmas, which was a great start in the first few months of having joined the company. And we are clearly an investment company, so we are now actively in the market looking at opportunities, and we're having discussions with three particular companies right now. In the sectors we like, and we'll be hoping to move those forwards pretty rapidly in the coming weeks and months. So I think we're very excited. We're at the beginning of the journey, which I think is also really a positive thing and an interest. And that's why I find it particularly interesting myself to be involved and the CEO of this business, because we're right at the beginning of the journey with a lot of interesting things to come.
All right, Dominic. Well, every day on the podcast, I do highlight the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets platform. And people put you on their watches by hitting the follow button. So could you give us three reasons why someone not following you should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Yeah, sure, Justin. I'll try and keep it to three. As I've mentioned, I think we've got a great team. The track record of the people involved in businesses is absolutely key. And all of us are used to being in listed companies in the property and property operating sector and raising money and making those investments and making them work well. So a great team. And we're aligned, which is obviously very important too. We're all aligned with the shareholders. Second, we've got a great strategy. We're in an area and looking at sectors which are underinvested right now, but which are already attracting more interest from larger investors. clearly we're recently funded, as everybody knows, so we have capital to start moving, and this is the start of the acquisition program for Energizer. So we're right at the beginning of a very interesting and exciting few months and years.
Marvellous. Well, listen, Dominic, you're obviously at the start of a very news-rich period, so I look forward to chatting to you again when you have some more news out.
Wonderful. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Ian Strafford-Taylor, CEO of FairFX Group. That's FFX ticker. Ian, thank you for coming back on.
Thank you for having me, Justin.
Now, you've had a couple of good bits of news out of the last few days. We'll cover that in a bit, and the share price is reacting accordingly. It looks a very strong chart there. But before we go into all that, Ian, could you give us a brief summary as to what FairFX is all about, please?
Yeah, well, actually, it's topical because you could argue that FairFX is evolving. So what we've done, what we do as our main business is foreign exchange on digitally, so very much an e-business, fintech business. So people can get their foreign exchange through our platform, whether it's for travel money or for international payments. They can do it all in one place, and that's our kind of USP.
Yeah, okay. And so the trading update released on the 17th was looking very strong, and I think that started the rise in the share price. Could you take us through some of the highlights there, Ian, from the trading update?
Yeah, I think, you know, when we spoke in the middle of last year, you know, everyone was very terrified of the Brexit votes, and we did well in the first half. But what we really saw after that uncertainty was out of the way was that our performance really accelerated in the second half of the year. And if you look at the details in the statement, you know, our second half was 45% higher than the equivalent second half in 2015. So that was the theme of what we saw, and we ended up turning over total foreign exchange transactions as just shy of 800 million, which is a fantastic figure, and well ahead of what we expected when we forecasted at the beginning of the year. So we're delighted with the performance, and I think the reason the share price reacted, you know, we've been talking for some time that we intend to be profitable this year. And with numbers like those for 2016, I think it's reinforced that that's very much an achievable target.
Yeah, and as far as going forward, yeah, you say you're targeting the higher margin core segments of the business. And what are those bits, Ian?
Well, essentially, it's probably easier to explain what the lower margin piece is. You know, the bit that which is still important to us, it's a great way to acquire customers, is the banknotes in the post. So, you know, people traveling to Europe, they might want some euro cash as well as a card, and because of the high cost of fulfillment of that, you know, you need to put it in insured bags, Royal Mail, and all these type of things. You know, it's lower spread for us, and so you could argue a bit low tech. So that is less important in terms of where we're focusing our firepower going forward. So we'll be focusing obviously on the card segment, both retail and corporate, growing our corporate offering in general, and the international payment side, which grew 49% in the year anyway. We see a lot more potential for us there.
Yeah. Do you think that we sort of partly discussed this last time, but do you think that with the Brexit, it made just Joe Bloggs more aware of currency fluctuations? And because it was the summertime, a lot of people were going on holidays, they realised, hang on a sec, you know, when the pound got knocked there, it's taken, you know, sort of 10-15% off their spending power. And therefore, they realised they boxed a bit clever here, they could have saved a bit of money there. Do you think that happened, you know?
I really do, Justin. I think, I think there's a far more general awareness of foreign exchange rates in this country, which is no bad thing. And I think with everything that's going on with Brexit anyway, that's only going to increase because, you know, we're going to be more of a sort of a single currency little island in the middle of some massive superpowers. So, yeah, it definitely had an effect, and that seems to be continuing, you know, when over the weekend it was obvious that Theresa May was going to make a speech about, you know, a harder Brexit, if you want to use that term. You know, the pound reacted accordingly. It was one of the main headlines, you know, May's going to give a speech and the pound's down. And it's front page news quite a lot.
Yeah, and it's almost like people will shop around, try and get 10, 15, 20 quid, you know, off their holiday somewhere, or 50 quid, and then, you know, leave the currency to the last minute. And you think, well, hang on, you could have saved, you know, a bit of money on that as well. So, I suppose it works.
I mean, it's still scandalous now, Justin. You know, if you go to an airport, you know, today, where, you know, the pound's around 1.15 to the euro, and you'll get about €1 to the pound in airports. I mean, you know, it's still the case. And if people do leave it to the airport, it's like you say, it's just throwing money away. It's far better to do things ahead of time.
Yeah, a bit of preparation, save you a bit of money there. Okay, so let's go with today's bit of news. Another good bit of news, the acquisition there of Q Money Limited and E-Money License. What does this mean for the business and what's it all about, Ian?
Okay, well, the key part of all of that is the e-money license itself. You know, it's you can apply for one. It takes quite a bit of time. It's quite a lengthy process. We chose to go this route to acquire a company that has it already, so we get it immediately. And also because the people involved in that company, there's a lot of know-how there in how to utilize it. An e-money license of itself is great, but it doesn't do anything. It's how you utilize it. And it opens up a wide array of options for us as a company. So if we look at what we're already doing, you know, a big part of our revenue is the issuance of these prepaid cards, both to retail and corporates. With an e-money license, we could issue those cards ourselves if we so choose, or renegotiate the deals we already have with the various people in the supply chain. So a lot we can do there just with what we're doing now. However, also wider than that, e-money license allows us technically to become, if you will, a digital bank. We can have sort codes, account numbers. Our customers can have accounts at Fairfax rather than having money, let's say, on cards. And within that little ecosystem, we can then therefore move money around without incurring banking fees, etc. So when you start thinking about it, it opens up some much, much wider ranges of activities for us as a company.
Yeah, it seems like it's almost one of those things that maybe a few years down the line, you look back and think, how do we do so well without that? You know, because you think it could transform how you operate. Like you say, I don't know what the costs are associated with using other banks, but like you said, if it's going to bring that down, then it's got to be a good thing for the business, hasn't it, really?
Yes. Yes, I have to re-emphasize it. In and of itself, having the license, whilst it's great, you know, it's what we do with it now, and that's where the fact that we've spent a good period of time acquiring the right people here, and we've now got a much stronger management team. It's not all, you know, reliant on me and one or two others. I'm very confident that we can make best use of it.
And how much is it costing to buy this business? Are you doing it part shares, is it part cash? Is that right?
Well, the initial tranche is you know, it's quite a small amount of money. It's £425,000. Yeah. £110,000 of that is in cash. The rest is in shares. There are other tranches that may come through, and the milestones are largely conditional upon cost savings to the company. So, you know, they're more than pay themselves for themselves, and they'll all be done in shares at the same price.
Yeah, excellent stuff. All right, Ian, well, listen, at Vox, I always highlight the top five most followed companies on the website in the last 24 hours. So can you give someone who's listening now who is not following you three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, which has a ticker FFX, please?
Yeah, I think, first of all, if you look back at all the various announcements we've made and what we intend to do, we've done what we said we would do. So we have that credibility of outperforming everything we said we would achieve. Secondly, you know, today's announcement and the one before, you know, we're diversifying our revenue stream. So rather than being totally reliant on foreign exchange for our income, increasingly we'll be adding a sort of sterling-based element to that. So there's far more diversification coming. And our horizons now with the e-money license are so much broader. There's so many things we can do, and we will be attacking those in the same orderly manner, and we'll achieve them.
Marvellous, Ian, lovely to chat to you, and look forward to chatting to you again in the not-too-distant future.
Thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Joel Andreni, CEO of Wide Sales Group, that's WDC ticker. Joel, thanks for coming on.
Hi, good morning, Justin. Thank you for having me.
Is marks out of 10 for my pronunciation of your name, please, Joel?
Well, the right way of saying it is João.
Joao. Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
That's pretty good.
All right. Well, I'll practice that overnight, and I will get it right next time.
No, it's good. It's good.
Marvelous. So the first thing, Joao, tell me all about Wide Sales Group. Now, it's quite a cutting-edge sector you're in, and so many people have their problems getting their head around exactly what you're doing and your future vision there. So can you explain, basically, what you do and what you hope to do? And we'll go into the potential after that, hopefully.
Yes, of course. So we, White Sales Group, we are, let's say, delivering the world's first end-to-end services solution, which is focused on making stem cell treatments accessible and affordable globally. Now, in practical terms, and to explain what stem cells are and their potential, stem cell treatments have, let's say, life-saving potential to tackle illnesses, including cancers, metabolic disorders, and immune conditions as well. But they are currently some of the highest priced treatments within the medical marketplace. And for that reason, we have developed the world's first stem cell insurance plan, because today there are around 3 million people all over the world that have paid to freeze their baby's umbilical cord blood stem cells that have this potential to treat around 82 blood diseases and blood disorders. So it's a very rich source of stem cells that can protect the family against future illness. And our audience might have heard about bone marrow transplants. Well, effectively, a bone marrow transplant is a stem cell transplant. And bone marrow competes with cord blood. But there is a big difference between the two. When we use bone marrow stem cells, we need a 100% match between donor and recipient. And that's why sometimes it's hard to find a bone marrow donor. Now, with umbilical cord blood stem cells, we need around 25% match, which normally is found within what's called the nuclear family circle, or meaning siblings and parents. So normally siblings and parents will have a compatibility of around 25 to 50%. So that's why so many families are storing their baby's umbilical cord blood. But treatments are very expensive. Most families will not be able to afford it. But now that we developed the cell plan, covering up to 1 million euros worth of medical travel and accommodation bills, they don't need to face this financial barrier anymore. And we believe even more families are going to start storing their baby's umbilical cord blood.
I understand. So essentially what we've got here, we've got people understanding the importance of storing the umbilical cord, you know, blood there. But a lot of these people are storing them, not understanding that should they need this in future, there'll be a huge bill to pay. Is that right?
That's right. Also, it's important to note that when a patient is diagnosed, let's say with a blood cancer, they will normally count with the opinion of the local treating physician. But due to the nature of the stem cell industry, stem cell treatments are spread all across the world. There's a lot of research and innovation going on. There are very interesting clinical trials. And the reality is that there is no centralized point of information because the industry is moving so fast. The whole stem cell industry is worth about $100 billion today. And the cord blood banking market is worth about $2.4 billion. And that's just people that are making the investment to store the baby's umbilical cord blood. So it's also important to provide a second medical opinion service provided by experts that are involved with stem cell transplantation. And that's something that we include in Cell Plan as well. Access to the opinion of world-class doctors and the best clinics where the patient will be able to access treatment in the future.
Yeah, yeah. So, and looking at, like you said, you mentioned a few figures there, but, you know, for you, what's appropriate for you when you're looking at this kind of potential? What are you targeting? What kind of numbers are you targeting? What are you looking at? And what's the, you know, what is the future revenue potential for you if you've ever, you know, I mean, it's very hard, like we say, to give sort of guidance in the future in a sector that's quite cutting edge. But how do you judge that, you know, from a business point of view?
Well, the sector is really cutting edge, but we've looked at the industry from another angle, and we've developed services that are able to support the industry, supporting cord blood banks that are storing stem cells for families, supporting hospitals and clinics by removing this financial barrier and allowing more patients to be able to access treatments. We are also developing our own laboratory facility at the University of Manchester, where we have already started to provide contract research, which is a service that we started to provide at the end of last year, which means that we are also enabling and supporting stem cell research companies to take their research into the next phases of its development. So what I mean by this is, if you look at it, we have cutting-edge technology, but what we are doing is facilitating access to that technology via insurance, expert medical opinion, a medical concierge service, and pretty much making stem cell treatments accessible and affordable, which is our mission. Now, looking at the long-term vision for the company, well, it's a very high ambitious plan, and we are looking to accomplish that by developing our three business divisions: Cell Plan, which is the insurance plan; Wide Academy, where we are building e-learning stem cell courses for healthcare professionals, so we can provide accurate medical and scientific information about what's going on in the industry, so they can recommend or prescribe stem cell services and treatment to their patients as well. And with White Cells Division, where we established the Institute of Stem Cell Technology in Manchester, we will also be able to provide families the possibility of storing their stem cells with us. And we are also supporting stem cell research companies via contract research. So these are three synergistic divisions, and all of them have the same mission, which is to make stem cell treatments accessible and affordable. Now, today, and when we look at umbilical cord blood, there are 82 diseases that can be treated. These are all life-threatening and rare diseases, but if the family is able to make an investment of around £2,000 to store the stem cells and pay around £150 a year for the insurance plan, removing the potential bill of £300,000, it's a great opportunity for the family to protect the family members against future illnesses.
Yeah, absolutely. And tell us about your story. How did you come into this then, Joe?
Well, it's almost 9 years now that I've been involved in the stem cell banking industry. We've now started to touch the more broad stem cell industry with our innovative services. But I've mainly always been involved in international business developments and also architecting new products and services in the companies I worked for previously. One of them is Future Health Technologies, which is the second largest cord blood bank in Europe at the moment, and perhaps the one that is growing more. I also worked for a newly formed company at the time, back in 2010, a company called Precious Cells International. They're also bringing some innovative services at the time. They were based at University of Brunel, and I helped to launch the company in seven countries very quickly, within 1 year time. And throughout that experience is where I have seen the major problems in the industry, and that's what led me to start White Cells in 2012. It's going to be our fifth anniversary this year, but I continue to say that we are still in the entrepreneurial stage. There's a lot to be done, and our long-term vision is very, very ambitious.
Yeah, exactly. And well, tell us about it. I mean, you know, a little bit in summary. Essentially, where would you like to be in, say, 5-10 years time here with White Cells?
Well, what I would really like to see is having patients all over the world being able to access the best stem cell treatments in the best locations, and making all of that affordable to most families. That's really what I would like to see in the future, because there is a disconnection between a cord blood bank, a stem cell research company, and a hospital, and also universities. It seems like we have four different things, but they should all go hand in hand. Education and training, so healthcare professionals can understand it better, and also the clients itself to understand better what these services are. Stem cell storage services, increasing ethics in the industry, increasing the quality standards, improving accreditation. That's very important, so that families, when they store their stem cells, they can have the enough trust that the stem cells can be used in 25 or 30 years time. Being able to provide an expert medical opinion and an insurance policy to remove the costs associated with the stem cell treatments, and also supporting stem cell research companies so that these treatments can be accessible through the hospitals and clinics that will be able to provide them. So I see these all together. I don't see these as separate divisions. And what White Cells is doing with our services is bringing that to one-stop shop.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Well, anyone listening right now, Dale, can you explain or give three reasons why, and if they're not following you on Vox, why they should hit that follow button, please?
Well, we are a very innovative company through the services that we provide, and we are starting to touch all the key elements of the stem cell industry, and this is completely innovative. We are diverse because we have different products that are able to generate multiple revenue streams, and there is a recognized demand for our products. We have people that pay to store their stem cells, but they do not have an insurance policy to cover costs associated with treatments, and they are looking for it.
Marvellous. It's lovely to chat to you. And listen, we'll speak again when you have some more news out. Thanks so much, Dale.
Thank you very much, Justin. Have a great day. Thank you.
Okay, today's suggested one for your watch list is Zinc Media, submitted by Silent Bagger. Ooh, sounds ominous there. All right, so what does the company do? Zinc Media transformed into one of the largest independent TV production companies in the UK. It was originally mainly a publishing company called Ten Alps, but liquidated that part of the business and acquired two of the UK's leading factual TV and film companies last year. How many shares does the company have an issue? 620 million. What's the current price and market cap? It's 1.525 pence, market cap 9.5 million. What revenue, profit, loss the company generate? Financial statements for the year ended 30th of June 2016 showed the group revenues of 22.62 million, gross profit of 6.4 million, EBITDA loss on that of 433K, so that's 433,000, and loss before tax from continuing operations of 3.66 million. How much cash or debt does the company have? Cash at 3.54 million. Borrowings listed in the current liabilities are £773,000. And on October 2016, the company announced a fundraising and debt restructuring package, raising £1.27 million gross proceeds. List three reasons why people should put this company on their Vox Markets watch list. Number one, transformational year for the group, having liquidated the loss-making divisions last year and acquired businesses to make Zinc Media one of the biggest independent TV and production companies in the UK, recognised worldwide for being one of the best factual TV and filmmakers globally, demonstrated by having unlimited access to the White House when they filmed Inside Obama's White House for BBC, and last year Zinc Media were nominated for 8 BAFTAs and won 3. That's quite impressive. All right, reason two, currently undervalued. Normal media companies are to be valued as a multiple of revenue. Similar UK company was sold to Sky in 2014 for a valuation 2.7 times revenue. The Zinc revenues are 22.6 million. If applied the same multiplier to Zinc, then companies should have be valued at 60 million at 10 pence per share. Currently undervalued 1.6 pence per share and 9.5 million market cap. Strategy to develop factual series for worldwide market with higher revenue streams. So expecting the revenue to be much higher over the coming year. Genuine 10 bag of potential. And number three, high caliber board of directors. Well-known and respected entrepreneur, ex-Channel 4 chairman Luke Johnson, has invested over 1 million of his own money in the company and is non-executive director of Zinc. So listen, do your own research. Like I say, when point two there, for example, the valuation, you've got to look at that. And I don't know what the company was, but it was sold to Sky for 2.7 million revenue. I always check out, obviously, profit. I mean, you know, that's a lot of companies are valued on profit, not just revenue. So be careful of that. But thank you very much. Sounds very interesting. And I will be putting those on my watch list personally, because winning three BAFTAs there out of 8 nominations and being now one of the largest TV and film makers independently is quite interesting. So ZIN is ticker. And by all means, do your own research there. I'll be doing some more research and seeing what's happening. And by all means, if you know of a company you think should be on other people's watch lists, please submit that company via voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. Click one of my posts there, scroll down, and you'll see a question there. Do you think you know of a stock that you think should be on other people's watch lists? Please click here to fill in the form, and I could be featuring it on a future podcast. All right, time for the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets platform in the last 24 hours. At five, UIU Metals. That's UIU. It's been there for a long time now, quite a, you know, featuring in the top five. At four, also almost a regular, Zenith Energy, ZEN. At three, Blue Star Capital. Of course, they've got that investment in Bitcoin in Satoshi Pei, which is quite interesting. At two, Asia Met Resources, AIS. And at number one, most followed company, yes, it was Fitbug Holdings, FITB, had a massive rise yesterday, didn't it? Off the back of that contract where they're supplying, is it 40,000 people with their products there in the Far East? But massive rise, triple-digit rise there off the back of that. All right, top five most liked RNSs on the Vox Markets website this morning were at four, this is a joint fourth, by the way, Greatland Gold. Further drill results confirm gold mineralization. At four also, Sirius Minerals. That's SXX, Future Project Reporting. At four, joint as well, W Resources. That's La Parilla Equipment Finance Grants and Development. At three, Zenith Energy. Zenith Energy Align Research Note release. And I think their target price there, 42 pence on that. Well, they're currently at 10 pence. At two, Energizer Investments, ENGI, Appointment of Vox Markets. Thank you very much. Number one, the most liked RNS out today was Sound Energy, SOU, successful TE7 extended well test. That's it for the podcast. Don't forget, listen, if you get the app, it's free. Download it. You can get RNSs from the companies you follow. And if you hit the plus or the thumbs up, thumbs down button, then it could be featuring in this list right here. Thanks very much for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.